LeBron James, sexiest man alive, and virgins making news.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
The worst day to be horny is Sunday. The best day is a Friday and Saturday night.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
You want to close. Close. As in C-L-O-S-E. Not C-L-O-T-H-E-S.
And Brandon Sprague.
I love me a Spanish-speaking woman. I really, really, really do. I love it. Now, that ain't all you got to have. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to have it, but I mean, it is a plus. A bilingual woman, specifically Spanish, whispering in your ear, it's a beautiful thing.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
The expectation is that you're going to be ready to step up and handle your business. That's her expectation, whether she tells you or not. Am I right, Solange? Amen. Amen.
The Fan.
All right, let's do this final hour. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube as we are every single morning. Good morning, everybody. The controversial open that was removed and then unremoved.
I didn't unremove it.
Now it's back in the rotation. It is still here. Stephen A. Smith getting you horny on a Thursday. We have a lot to get to. Our college football picks coming up here in a matter of moments. The Seattle Seahawks.
Speaking of getting horny, Seahawks fans.
Seahawks
man.
Fans are super horny right now. They are 2-0. They're off to a great start offensively. They look good. They get a close win over New England this past weekend. With that, let's check in on them. See how things are going. Geno's playing great. Joining us now, Brian Nemhauser, at Hawk Blogger on Twitter. Podcaster covering the Seahawks for almost 20 years, one of the best out there. Brian, first off, good morning to you, man. Are you surprised at the level that Geno Smith is playing two games into the season? And just what have you made of how he's looked? Because a lot of the metrics point to him being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL early on in the year.
Good morning, guys. I'm not surprised. I think, obviously, his season did not start off well with that interception that he threw on that pass. But he has been playing at a very high level for really a couple of years, and I think a lot of people kind of undersold his performance last year. In a lot of ways, that was a more impressive performance than when he won Comeback Player of the Year, because the offensive line was in such a state of disarray, because the running game was in such a sorry state. So, you know, through two games this year, he is throwing the football faster than all but two other quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's doing it at a highly efficient rate. So he's really, really off to a great start.
You wrote a good piece on Mike McDonald in the shift of defense to the point where, I don't know if you've seen it yet, turn on the television, Mel Kiper's yelling that we need to get rid of two high safeties because the NFL does not have a passing attack anymore. So defense is pissing a lot of people off, and I thought your piece was really interesting. I want to ask you an offensive question, though, because you point to Geno had a better year last year than people think, but their offensive line struggles, their team success wasn't great, and now Pete is out. Ryan Grubb, the new OC, what have you noticed that's different about this Seattle era with Ryan Grubb at the helm?
Man, there's so many things. I think the primary thing that we're seeing with Grubb, I'd say two things. One, he just has more answers for what the defense is putting in front of Geno Smith and that offense. So, for example, they're getting rid of the ball quicker. So you're seeing a lot more outlet passes. You're seeing Geno hit Jackson Smith and Jigba, not just on these bubble screens, which was never a great utilization of Jackson Smith and Jigba's talents, but you're seeing them hit him over the middle of the field. If you watched his route tree last week, he covered every single part of the field. And there were too many times that Shane Waldron had, a third down play. Every player was all the way down to the sticks, and there was nowhere for Geno to check the ball down to if the offensive line didn't do their job well. So I think he's just giving Geno a lot more opportunities, a lot more answers, and I think he's utilizing the talents, of which there's a lot on this roster, better. Ken Walker's a guy to keep watching for because, you know, he was injured last week, but I think Ryan Grubb is enamored with what Kenneth Walker can do, not just as a runner, but as a pass catcher out of the backfield.
Yeah, ask Bear fans right now, too, how they feel about Shane Waldron as well. That's not going great two games into the season there in Chicago. We're talking with Brian Nemhauser, hawkblogger.com, at hawkblogger on Twitter. Go give him a follow, covering the Seahawks. You know, looking at the run game, it's funny, my co-host mentions the two-eye safety thing. Run games are kind of back. It's kind of a resurgence right now in the NFL. And I think if there's any concern, you mentioned the injuries up front, or at least the injury to Kenneth Walker. Seattle this past weekend had a really hard time running the ball against New England. Injuries a massive part of that, but they also gave up 185 yards on the ground to an offense that I think most people would come into that game saying, what's New England going to try to do? They're going to try and run the football. Where are they at up front on each of those? And is it as simple as a Kenneth Walker injury is the reason why the run game maybe didn't pop last weekend?
No, you know, in talking to Mike McDonald yesterday and earlier this week, you know, he's pretty adamant about on two things on both sides of the ball that might not be obvious. One, you know, he didn't feel like Zach Charbonnet had a lot of room to run. He challenged the offensive line to get more push, and I think that's accurate. They did not create a lot of space against that Patriots front. And then on defense, you'd think that maybe the defensive line was not doing their job when you give up 185 yards rushing, but Mike McDonald really emphasized yesterday that he thinks those guys are really doing their job, which implies that maybe it's more of a challenge at the second or third level that he's seeing. And so, you know, this week against the Dolphins, it is a drastically different run attack than what New England does, where they run right down your throat. Miami attacks the edges. It's much more about speed and misdirection. And so it'll be a different challenge, but a lot of focus on the run game without Tua Tagovailoa in the game for them.
Yeah, what do you expect? Because I think a lot of Seahawks fans, Brian, maybe not a fan, but per se, like you're kind of viewing this the same way. I think a lot of people are expecting the 3-0 start. We just don't know what to expect. Is it Snoop Huntley? Is it Skylar Thompson? Miami's coming off of a weird situation with their Tua stuff. What is the expectation this weekend in your mind, or how you prepare for Miami with quarterback uncertainty?
Well, it'll almost certainly be Skylar Thompson. He's played for them before. He's played a playoff game for them before. So it would be hard to imagine that Snoop Huntley would come in short notice and play. But, you know, this is going to be a team that's going to – they're a very effective running team. You have to assume they're going to try to really emphasize that part of their offense. And look, you know, you've got three of the fastest players in the NFL. It doesn't take much to create big explosive plays. And look at what the Packers did just last week. You lose Jordan Love, you think maybe your season's on the line, and they rush for, you know, hundreds of yards to win that game. So Mike McDaniel is a fantastic offensive play caller. He and Mike McDonald know each other well. They've actually gotten each other once in each of their two matchups. I don't think that this is a game that anyone can just chalk up as a victory. But one big thing to note is Tua Tagovailoa was the fastest passer in the NFL, 2.31 seconds to throw. The average time to sack in the NFL is like 2.9. So wow. Skylar Thompson's 2.7. That just gives the pass rush a little bit more time to get home. And that could be the difference in the game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What do you make of the landscape of the NFC West early in the year? You know, the Niners probably the favorite coming into the year, and now injuries piling up for them. We've seen the Rams have success in the playoffs last year as well. But again, it seems like nobody's healthy on that entire team right now. Cardinals 1-1, Seattle the only 2-0 team. Just kind of what do you make of the landscape of the NFC West early in the year?
Man, I mean, it's hard to remember a team that's had their season end in two games like the Rams have because, I mean, devastating injuries. And I think they came into the season with such promise, a ton of young players. But I think one of the things that happened there is everyone's like, oh, Aaron Donald, you lose Aaron Donald in the pass rush. And, well, they got these guys from Florida State, Jared Verse and Braden Fisk. They'll help with the pass rush. Well, Aaron Donald turns out is pretty good at run defense as well, and that's where the Rams have just absolutely fallen off. And everyone says the injuries, they've only had like one injury on defense, and that defense has allowed the second most points in the NFL. So I think the Rams are probably cooked. Arizona is a team that's going to be on the rise. Their offense is going to be dangerous week in, week out, but their defense also is very suspect and probably a year away from really being something meaningful. And then the 49ers, I mean, it's an interesting team. Like, there's no doubt they have the talent. They are still probably the most talented team in the NFC. But it does not feel like they're the bullies on the block that they were for the last few years. And one of the things to keep in mind is their defense had been their hallmark for so many years. Their run defense started eroding last year, and it's looking like it might be worse this year. And so right now it's Fred Warner playing like defensive player of the year that's making that defense sing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm not sure that 49ers team is as good as the one that they had last year. And that one wasn't good enough to win the Super Bowl. So they're still searching for it. I think the Seahawks have a shot, more of a shot than I think I would have even expected at that division. But, you know, they're going to have to really continue to climb with what's still a pretty young team on both sides of the ball.
Your article I mentioned, you got some other stuff up at hawkblogger.com, but your article in the NFL Game of Thrones defense is coming, and it is here, and people are noting it all around the league. Mike McDonald is a young coach. It's his first head coaching gig, but just the transformation of what he has done very early. It is only week two, so we'll see where this is at, like week 7, 8, 9, 10, etc. The transformation he's had in Seattle and just the impact he's had on defense in the league. You wrote about it. Could you help explain that to some of our listeners who haven't seen it yet? Hawkblogger.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's what kind of got my attention to it was just watching how scoring has gone down every year for the past few years. And it's the first time it's happened since 1992 that we've seen three straight years of scoring decline. And as I dug into it, I've talked to a lot of people that I respect that know defense and know X's and O's more than I'll probably ever know them. There's a few things happening. I mean, on one side, Vic Fangio is a defensive coordinator that, you know, started with Stanford, came in with the 49ers with Jim Harbaugh, and, you know, right now is with the Eagles. But he has a defensive philosophy that does rely on two deep safeties, and when you have two deep safeties, it really limits explosive plays. That's not really new, but what he's really done is he's forced quarterbacks to make decisions after the snap. So he does a lot of disguising so people don't know exactly what coverage is going to be pre-snap. And so all these quarterbacks that spent all this time being able to look at, you know, this player or that player and know exactly where they could go with the ball after the snap are now having to make that decision in real time, and it's a much harder thing to do. So that's one part of it. But what Mike McDonald's done is he's added a similar amount of disguise to pass pressure. So Jim Johnson, who used to be a linebackers coach with the Seahawks and then defensive coordinator for the Eagles for many years, he was famous for bringing pressure from every part of the field all the time. Mike McDonald has taken that from Jim Johnson and Rex Ryan and those guys. But what he does is he doesn't blitz much. So he brings pressure from cornerbacks and safeties and everywhere, but he only brings four players. So he's able to still keep all those players back to defend the pass. And so now you've got quarterbacks and offenses having to decipher coverages and pass pressure in a way that they just haven't had to do before. And you're seeing a real depressive effect on the passing game. It's the lowest passing yardage we've seen in you know, decades. And scoring continues to drop. So it's an interesting, you know, trend, and it's going to be something where you're going to see innovation on both sides of the ball, but mm-hmm. but right now defenses are making the strides.
It's fascinating, man. The chess match and the back and forth that we have on each side is really fun to watch, and this idea of changing rules is always funny to me because you're going to get an adjustment. As we're pointing out defensively, what they're doing offense is to throw it off, and I'm sure offense will have a counterpunch at some point. Brian Nemhauser covers the Seahawks. Hawkblogger.com is where you can check out all of his work. At Hawkblogger on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Does a great job covering the team for a long time up there. Brian, thanks for the time in Portland, man. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Will do. Thank you guys for having me. Say hi to my hometown down there.
There you go. Great stuff. Yeah, local Portland guy, Brian Nemhauser. Good stuff on Seattle. And, it, you know, I know we love sexy offense and 52-49. And you remember that, what was it, Chiefs-Rams Monday night game a couple of years ago where it was, you know, everybody scores, everybody wins.
Do we? Because, like, I remember being in that, and I loved that game.
Everybody was complaining the other way.
That there was no defense.
It's too easy. This is what we love about football is that you find adjustments, you find tweaks, and you find things that can throw offenses off. Guess what offenses will do in the next 2 years?
And now we're complaining
they'll adjust.
We need the offense.
They'll adjust back, and then the defense will counterpunch. And that's, I don't know, that's just the beauty of football to me. But defenses have dominated early in the season. And it's one this weekend where Seattle's defense should dominate. I mean, you're going against Skylar Thompson.
They're the third best passing defense so far in the NFL. Now they've Bo Nix and Jacoby Brissett will help that, but
so will Skylar Thompson.
Skylar Thompson could very well. And like, I know Snoop Huntley had some moments for Baltimore, but it's a new playbook. You know, I know we've seen the Pastrnak win games for the Vikings on the fly, but very rarely does that happen. So it's a favorable matchup for them going in. At least it's just, can you contain the weapons And does Skylar Thompson get the ball out quicker? Did they devise and scheme up ways to attack the Seahawk defense that's off to a good start?
These games are important, man. It's a winnable game for them. You got to win those ones. You can be 3-0. They're the only undefeated team early on in the season in the division. Let's get to our big PP picks. How did we do last week? Who are we picking this week? That's next on The Fan. All right, we get to a couple of NFL notes coming up. Should we make a big deal out of this? It's one of those trending topics in the NFL the last 2 days. Let's get to our big PP picks, though. You guys ready? See how we did last week?
I took one out of allegiance. The other one was the easiest one to nail.
Washington State and Washington, the line was 5. We all took Washington State. The Cougs did cover. And the Civil War line was 16. Swag and I took Oregon. You took Oregon State. Swag's a traitor.
He is a traitor.
Went against his beeves.
Don't really want to hear it. Oh, it's about a segment and being right and wrong.
Went against his beeves.
You cannot claim to be a fan and pick against your team. Get off. Get out of here.
So season records. Swag is in first place, 7-3 on the year. Good start for Swag. 2-0 week for me. I'm above 500, 6-4. 1-1 week for Brandon Sprague, 5-5.
500.
Nobody's losing money.
Not yet.
Our big PPs are off to a good start.
Yeah, I'll give him more time.
Here we go. Let's start. I like to go in chronological order.
Well, Washington State's line's got to be massive.
See, that's the funny thing. So let me just look up my kick times here. Oh, the Cougs play Friday night?
Yeah.
That's a Friday night game.
San Jose State. Tomorrow night, San Jose State, baby.
Okay, well, we'll start there then. Yeah. Washington State is at home against San Jose State. Now, they don't have these because we're trying to do A-line A-lines. The Washington schools are not, so I went and found the DraftKings line for this game. Cougs favored by 12.
Yeah. Letdown spot is what Vegas would be thinking here.
What am I missing here?
I don't know. I'm taking the Cougs minus 12.
Has to be it, right?
I mean, San Jose State, the fighting Brennans.
The no longer fighting Brennans?
The no longer fighting Brennans.
The used to be fighting Brennans.
I think they still have that quarterback that I watched play last year against Oregon State that can't throw the football, so it's just a running guy.
Yeah.
I say this having not watched much.
They are 3-0. They beat Sacramento State 42-24. They beat Air Force 17-7. And then they beat Kennesaw State 31-10.
And maybe the Air Force win is something to think about here.
Feisty.
12, huh?
12. That's a funky line.
Smells weird.
What are they telling me?
Washington State's coming off an emotional big game. Yeah, short week.
Are you flip-flopping on me? Are you flip-flopping?
Who do they have after San Jose State?
After San Jose State, they go on the road to Boise State.
Oh, plus 12. I'll take the plus 12.
Wow.
I'll fall into the trap.
San Jose State is going to throw it all over the yard. They do not run the football.
Coming
back and slinging.
Way wrong.
And
have you watched them play?
I have not watched them play.
Just looked at the numbers. We like the numbers. They can throw the ball.
So the question is, do you trust the Cougs more?
Make sure he's
with
right
their
on that
secondary. Go ahead.
Check your numbers.
Their quarterback's
bitch.
Averaging over 300 yards a game passing. So, it's a funky line. It's a weird spot. It's Friday night.
They're number one in the Mountain West. He is indeed correct.
I think I'm going to take the points. I think the Cougs win. I think it's a back and forth game. And
it's an emotional game coming off of, and then you have the look ahead spot at Boise.
How quickly can they refocus their attention on the next thing when the next thing isn't all that attention worthy?
They beat Boise Dirt. They're probably in the top 25, and then they start the group of five look.
They should be in the top 25 right now.
I agree with that.
I see all the arguments here. Maybe I'm just trying to yin where everybody's yanging. I'm going to take the Cougs here.
Are they?
You tell me tight game, uncomfortable. Okay, I could see that. But late touchdown, you win. I don't know.
Is it 12 or 12 and a half?
12 flat.
It'd be funny if it right at 12.
You give me a 38-24 win, right? But it's like 31-24 and you tack one on late. Maybe I'm taking the bait here. I'm the mouse in the cheese trap. I'm going to eat that cheese. Give me that Cougar cheese and I will take the Cougs minus 12. Next up will be Saturday, 4 o'clock on FS1. The Huskies, coming off that emotional loss, are still at home this weekend, and their Big Ten opener is against the juggernaut of Northwestern.
Are they ever going to leave Seattle?
When they play a road game, man. The juggernaut of Northwestern's in town. That line on DraftKings, currently Huskies minus 10.5.
I'm going to take the Huskies here. That's an uncomfortable number. They're so reliant on their run game. Northwestern's coach is, people like that guy. I'm going to go for a good bounce back spot here. Huskies minus 10.5.
Okay. I think I'm going to go lay the number. Northwestern's offense is abysmal. Like, the Husky defense should suffocate them. The question is can their offense pick it up enough? And I'm going to have a little bit of confidence that they can. I don't know that Northwestern scores much into double digits in this game.
Northwestern on the year is 2-1. They beat Miami, Ohio in week one, 13-6. They lost at home to Duke, 26-20, and beat Eastern Illinois, 31-7 last week.
Got into the 30s once.
30s once, which, you know, that's great 3 weeks into the year. I love Washington this weekend. It's not a look-ahead spot in any way, shape, or form. Their first road game, by the way, talk about going on the road, is at Rutgers next Friday. That's it. 8 o'clock Eastern kick
short
at
week.
Rutgers, short week. So
East Coast.
Welcome to Big Ten life.
Welcome to Jersey.
Yeah, welcome to Jersey.
Tony Soprano in the stands.
I just, you know, look, I gambled against him 2 weeks ago because I just thought that number's too high and it's kind of funky and non-conference game. Like, you're pissed off. You just lost a rivalry game. There should be a sense of motivation and energy in that locker room to get that taste out of your mouth. Northwestern sucks,
their
man.
Their offense is not good. I watched some
terrible.
Of that Duke game that went to overtime that was just brutally
went
ugly.
Went to overtime and they only scored 20.
That was a Friday night game, I
it
think.
Was
it was
awful.
Horrible,
so
dude.
So the Huskies won. They should be a little torqued off and extra focused. That defense should suffocate their offense.
We'll make it 3-for-3. All of us on Washington. Last but not least, we come back to the wonderful state of Oregon, where your Beavs still in the state. Did you see, by the way, God, total side note.
Yeah.
Somebody asked Dan Lanning yesterday at his press conference how they're preparing to play their first road game next week against UCLA.
Did he say we don't? It's a home game?
Well, no, he said we just played a road game. We just did that. Oregon State at home, 5:30 on Saturday. Now, this one is on A&A. And the A&A line on this game, 5.5 at home against Purdue. Again, 5:30 kick on the CW network. Oregon State minus 5.5.
Come on. Really? Any doubt? Am I worried? Not at all. Concerned? Hudson Card's in for a nightmare. You think Purdue players know what a chainsaw is?
No, they got no clue.
No, they don't.
No,
Boilermakers. They don't touch chainsaws.
No, they don't. I think going back and breaking down the film for Trent Bray and his staff for the players, they're going to find more positive things than they probably felt like when that game ended. And I think the same formula applies. They should be able to run wild on them, control the clock, force limited possessions for Purdue, and I think they should pull away as the game goes on. It might be tight again at halftime, and that's just because there's limited possessions, but I think as the game goes on, they'll pull away and cover that.
Yeah, national money this week has come in on Purdue. I think it opened 5.5, 6 nationally. The national line's down, but here in the Northwest, people like betting Oregon State, so the A&A line has not moved a ton. I hope that this is a great atmosphere, man. They're trying to do this stripe out. It's a Big Ten team that's coming to town. I know that the future does not look great, and people are not happy with the direction that things are going, but their schedule's coming together for next year. Like, the 7 games that they have on the books are not bad. Most of them are power teams. Like, at least there's interesting matchups throughout. This is a chance to beat a team from the Big Ten in your stadium and one that's not very good, in which the matchups, I think, kind of favor Oregon State and their ability to run the football. I love Oregon State this weekend. I think they win by 2 tutties. Can I give them a dirt 2 tutty guarantee?
I asked you earlier. You said 35-31.
I'm upping it. I'm even more confident than I was an hour and a half ago, man. The confidence is only growing ability to run the football.
They lost by 35, and he's like, there's so much good things from that game.
It is political season. A lot of fence riding.
Look, Republicans vote too. This is how we do things, right? You know, what's the Jordan line? They buy shoes too.
They buy shoes too.
Well, Beaver fans listen to the show too. No, I just hope it's a good atmosphere. That's my biggest question out of this weekend.
That's a very valid.
Last week was underwhelming, to say the least, and there was a lot of green there. I can't imagine Purdue fans are flocking to Corvallis at the end of September for this game. So you're trying to stripe out. Does it look good? Is it sold? I mean, you're not going to sell out probably, but give me a good. It's a night game. It's the first game with students back.
It's like a big one for momentum.
Dude, show up. Let's go.
You need to capture some stuff here.
The next 2 weeks after this, you got like Nevada and some other cakewalk. Colorado State, who sucks, dude. You win this game, you're sitting there. You got a chance to be 5-1.
Yeah.
This is a momentum turning game, I think, for the rest of their season. I think they take advantage of it. There you go. So there's your big pee-pee picks. We'll tweet out our big pee-pee pick here in a moment on Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. Go give us a follow. We will follow you back. Should we make a deal out of this? People are. Are we in agreement? That's next. All right, welcome back in. If you're just waking up, you missed some hot burrito talk a little bit ago. I think if we're going to win an award as a show, that segment will probably do it. What do they call the radio awards?
The Marconi Awards?
Marconi, yeah.
Those usually go to the national shows and the big, like, seven cities.
How many of them are doing hot burrito, five-layer burrito talk on a Thursday morning?
They're doing backup New England Patriot offensive line concern talk.
And all the national shows are doing segments on the Dallas Cowboys.
Or Mel Kiper's take away the two safeties on defense. Yes. That's usually what it is, yeah.
The Mel Kiper thing today, so he came out and said two high safeties should be banned in the NFL. That reeks.
You have a good theory here.
Reeks. So you and I do this every day. We show prep. You're diving into stuff. Let's be honest. Last night we're looking around and I'm like, it's, you know, a little light for a Wednesday. Oregon's not playing this week. So for us locally, there's a bye, like a little light. That reeks of, hey guys, we need something to talk about all day.
And that's going to catch on.
Who wants to fall on the sword and say something really stupid that then all of our shows can react to? And so he comes on and says, let's ban two high safeties. And now GetUp has been debating for an hour the ridiculousness of the take of Mel Kiper.
McAfee's going to do it as soon as GetUp's
Absolutely
done.
Absolutely, he will. This is outrageous.
Our local shows are going to do it, too, because Mel Kiper gave the audio. Why would you not? We've brought it up on the show.
Take the bait. I'm taking the bait.
Everybody in Ashley's going to do it, and ESPN. I think you're right. I really do. I think you're 100% right. Who was it? I think it was... Oh, it was Dominic Foxworth was doing a podcast with Bill Barnwell and Mina Kimes, and about midway through that podcast, so something that wasn't going to get aggregated, he dropped the line of saying something about the Cowboys, and they laughed, and like, we're not on First Take, and he laughs, and he goes, look, they give us metrics. We know where the bread is buttered.
Yeah,
like,
right, they know what they're doing.
They know what to do, and they know how to do it, and I think you're 100% accurate here. He had a great moment with the Bryce Young stuff.
He did.
They brought him back on, and he said the most ridiculous thing. That dude is the number one player evaluator on their website.
He is. And he thinks they're going to ban two high safeties in the NFL? There's no chance Mel Kiper is that stupid.
Not a chance in hell.
No chance.
So I think your theory is correct. I think ESPN had a mandate. Guys, it's super dry. You could have talked Jets. The Jets are on Thursday Night Football tonight.
The tough part is they're playing New England and nobody cares about the Patriots anymore. Let's get to this. So this happened in the aftermath of, was Texans Bears Sunday night? That was a Sunday night game, right?
The what?
The Texans Bears game.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday night football. Okay. Yeah. So after the game, we talked about the reaction to Caleb and the way that he looked. Their offensive line's terrible. And this is leading to conversations about, one, Shane Waldron in Chicago, probably public enemy number one. They're out on him.
My biggest concerns for them, I picked them to make a wild card, the seventh seed. My biggest concern was their coach isn't very good, and they picked Shane Waldron to be Caleb Williams' offensive coordinator.
You know who they could have had, who they interviewed? The Kubiak bro in New Orleans.
Clint Kubiak.
They interviewed Kubiak to be their offensive coordinator and did not hire him.
Now, he wouldn't have changed their offensive line woes.
No.
But as Nimhauser told us with Seattle, sometimes it's about scheme and getting the ball out quicker.
There was a clip, I think it was in Jigba, who was doing an interview around the time of the draft or whenever they hired Waldron, and they asked him for his thoughts. You know, like, what advice do you have to Rome Odunze, who's going to be playing in the Shane Waldron offense? And he was live on the air, and he responded, are we recording this right now? Because he wanted to be, and he was like, yeah, he's good. That was basically the answer. You can go find that clip from a couple months ago. Well, after the game happened, Caleb Williams struggles, not all on him. His offensive line was terrible, but it was a really rough night for him in primetime on Sunday night. C.J. Stroud, who had an awesome rookie year last year, tried to, you know, the quarterbacks do their midfield handshake, and they, yeah, good game, give a little piece of advice. This was an interesting back and forth between C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah.
Hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, yeah. Learn from those mistakes. And everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yep.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
So it's hard radio to tell, but I'm sure you've seen the video by now. But if you haven't, C.J. Stroud's kind of coming in for the hug, trying to give him some advice. Caleb Williams just wants a quick handshake, and he's turning and walking away. Basically, good game, and I'm done. He's in pain, and he's not happy, and his team didn't play great, and he didn't play great.
Yeah.
And C.J. Stroud, you can hear him in there being like, hey, hold on, man. And he's like grabbing his shoulder pad, like, can you hang out here for a second? And this has led to many takes on both sides. So the hot take on the Stroud side is, why is he big broing Caleb Williams? It's kind of like you're only in year two. too.
He's younger than Caleb.
He's younger than Caleb Williams, yeah. Which I didn't know that. That blew my mind. And then the other side of it is Caleb is he's a debated guy. The nails and the personality and everything. Sure. Is he have too big of an ego? Is he too cool for C.J. Stroud's advice? This has led to quite the kerfuffle out of Sunday Night Football.
I don't find much kerfuffle involved here.
You don't want a kerfuffle on this?
Well, C.J. came out and said I wasn't big broing him. I was just
trying to give him advice.
Yeah. I respect him. I really like his game a lot. They've known each other for a few years here. I think Caleb was trying to get out. He was, you know, he lost on Sunday night. He didn't throw a touchdown pass. Ever since he called his punter and proclaimed that you're not going to be making a lot of punts, he's punted more at this point than he did last year.
He did.
And I think he was physically hurting. It's funny how we conclude these things. And I'll tell you something else. This isn't part of the kerfuffling of...
Give me a Mel Tucker hot take or Mel Kiper hot take.
It's not really a hot take. They have conditioned me now where I want to see the coach handshake and the quarterback dap up. Because I want to hear if I can catch something.
Is something off?
And
something?
I was watching. I was in my living room because I wait until I see the dap up between the quarterbacks and the coaches shake before I turn the television off for Sunday Night Football or any other national game. I don't know what it is or why, but I love seeing it. And once in a while, you get rewarded. Like the Shadur, Colorado State quarterback.
Yeah, this weekend.
You get some awkwardness. The Jim Harbaugh, and I forget the coach's name, who he slapped on the back too aggressively.
Jim Schwartz, yes.
Occasionally, you get some, like,
whap, right in the back.
And I saw the way that this had transpired, and I said to myself, I wonder if that's going to be a thing. And I just assumed they were friends. They are, but of course, it became a thing.
I don't know why it's blowing my mind. So I did not know that C.J. Stroud is younger than Caleb Williams. It's by like a month and a half or 6 weeks or something.
Because it's second year for him and it's Caleb's first year.
And Caleb was only in college for 3 years, right? Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Did C.J. Stroud graduate high school early?
Because
he was in college for 3 years, I thought, wasn't he?
You have to be 3 years post-graduation.
Yes, you have to be. Yeah. So he must have graduated early then.
Yeah. That's my guess.
Graduated high school a year early. Well, and then got into like reclassified.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was there at 20, 21, and 22. So he had 2 years as a starting quarterback at Ohio State.
Hmm.
So he was in college for 3 years. So he must have graduated, you know, one of those 17. We got this right now with who's the Alabama? Ryan Williams, is that the wide receiver?
Yeah, he's 17 years old.
He's 17 years old, yes. Just torching college defenses.
Yeah.
So that kind of blew my mind. Is
this anything for you?
No, not at all. I just find it funny. Caleb is a very... Like controversial is kind of fair to say. With like people have takes on Caleb. He's not like an average vanilla quarterback. Like people are either all in on him or he rubs you the wrong way. And so when these kind of videos come out, you're getting like, oh, there he is. There's the big egomaniac, Caleb. I don't need your help. And there was that kind of vibe.
That was the conclusion. He didn't need the help.
Like, yeah, don't talk to me. I don't need your advice, man. I got this. I want a Heisman Trophy, bro. You don't know who you're talking to.
He took a lot of responsibility for their missed opportunities on the game yesterday.
How dare you bring facts to this conversation? How dare you bring facts into the conversation? What are you doing here, man? Come on.
He is polarizing. Mainly, I think it's because of the nail thing, the comments of confidence that he, you know, he shows, and it's the outfits.
Definitely the
outfit. His outfit this weekend?
Definitely the outfit.
A little zesty Indiana Jones.
That's a good way to put it. Who do they got this weekend? Who do the Bears got this weekend?
The Colts. This is a must-win game for both sides.
These are our Colts. This is our team. We love them.
Those songs have been happening, and the Colts got involved.
I saw the mascot.
The mascot was in week one.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Controversy. It's in Indianapolis. The Colts are a favorite.
Why would you not make the Colts a favorite?
They just
What
lost.
About the Bears playing?
They're 0-2 and they got beat by Malik Willis.
Okay. The Bears should be 0-2
as well. They
got to
win. Should be, isn't.
Should be,
not the same.
But you're not going into that game feeling like they're a confident 1-1 team.
Get you one of these. That's All called right. a win.
Does Richardson, who looks worse, Richardson or Williams this weekend?
That's a good poll question.
Yeah, that's the real question.
Don't put that one in your quad box on Sunday. All right, let's close up. Thursday Night Football is a dud. Are we excited to watch it? And we'll answer the poll question, wrap it up on a Thursday next on The Fam. But that you love me, yeah. There it is at the Vancouver Ford text line. Caleb's a douche. I love that.
You said not have this on your quad. I change the quad. I'll interchange, you know, through the games.
Mix and match throughout the day.
I think this week is an 8-5 slate. 8 in the 10, 5 in the PM.
Let me count them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 in the morning.
Okay.
3, 4, 5.
7 and 5.
7 and 5, okay. Mix match.
7 and 5.
Yeah, it's a doubleheader on Monday night.
That's right. We got a doubleheader on Monday night. So
the Commies are on Monday night, and we all want to watch the Commies exactly. play a nationally televised game.
Anytime you watch Jane Daniels maybe get hurt on a hit, you should do it.
There is a number on there behind the line of scrimmage passes. It's like 47. I can't remember the number off the top of my head.
Cliff Kingsbury
offense. But the percentage of the like league-wide average is like 12, and they're at like 40% behind the line of scrimmage.
I don't have much criticism. Jane Daniels helped lead his team to a win. He is largely only doing this by running the football, and I'm telling you, he's going to get hurt if this doesn't change.
Yes, he will.
He's too skinny. I interchange on my quad viewing for YouTube TV on Sundays with the ticket. I am absolutely going to have Colts Bears on there for a decent chunk.
I mean, when I look at the rest of the morning slate, yeah. I think Houston, you're on to something, Minnesota. Dude. It's a bad slate.
Houston,
in the morning.
Minnesota's okay. on there. I think Chargers Steelers is on
Eagles
there.
Eagles and Saints.
Yeah. Chargers Steelers.
But you got like Broncos and Bucks. Woof.
Not that.
I don't want to watch Denver play.
And Browns.
Oh. Packers and Titans as a whole. Like Malik Willis against Will Levis.
It's a revenge game for Malik.
Why is Tennessee favored in that game?
Why would they not be?
Because they got Mayo boy.
Can they stop the run? That's pretty much what Titans are looking at doing.
Yeah, Giants and Browns, woof. Your afternoon slate's at least a little bit better.
Yes.
With Ravens and Cowboys, just the storylines around that. Ravens are 0-2. Cowboys
Lions
just got
at Cardinals.
Lions and Cardinals a good game.
And then what Niners does and Miami
is
do
Is Lions
in
Cardinals
Seattle?
A good game?
I think Lions and Cardinals is a good game. Oh, I think my. That's a fair assessment, I think.
Okay.
Thursday Night Football tonight is on Prime. Bum, bum, ba, da, da, whatever the Prime music is. Are we excited to watch the Jets and the Patriots in primetime football?
Not really, but we will.
Hammer the under. I'm hammering the under, and I'm going...
That's a great headline for the game. Jets and Patriots tonight. We're not excited, but we're going to watch it. That's what we do.
We excited for Jets-Patriots? Not really, no. But we're going to watch it. Yep. Yes or no at Dirt and Spray?
You're hammering the under tonight, huh? 38.5 is your under number, I believe?
Short week. Two physical defenses. One team can only win by running the football. The other one dinks and dunks their way down the field and hopes Braylon Allen runs it in. Yeah, Smells like a 18-13 game.
I'm off to a really bad gambling start this year.
Oh, so am I. Don't listen to anything I'm doing.
No, don't take any of these picks. And
are you gambling with real money, Swag?
Real money, but I have not gone to the big units yet. It's been small units.
It's been
here
small,
and there.
But I've lost a lot.
The big wood's still in here?
Yeah. Is your big wood not in there anymore?
It might be in there, but I haven't used it. So
Today I'm laying the big wood.
Five-layer burrito guy did.
Yeah, he did. He's laying that wood right there.
Right in the butt.
This game's going to suck.
Look, I'm, as a bad gambler.
How is this picked?
Help me out here for a second, okay?
Why is this picked?
I know they just won by a touchdown last week, but if Mayo Boy's not turning the ball over, they don't win that game by. They might win, but they're not winning that game by a touchdown.
No. Uh-uh.
Why are we not on New England plus the six tonight? What have the Jets showed? Like, New England went on the road. They beat Cincinnati.
They're so one-dimensional.
I mean, I get that, but the Jets can't stop the run. The Niners ran it down their throat in the opening night. They went to, look, I know everybody's high on the Seahawks right now. Let's not pretend like that game wasn't an overtime game.
I know.
That came down to four minutes left in overtime with a game-winning field goal?
Yeah.
They're getting six. Rodgers can't move. COVID toy boy, can't move.
I mean,
I'm on
the points.
I'm taking the points tonight.
I'm not mad at it.
I'm an idiot, so Jets will cover.
I'm more. I'll go the under because
ride the under with me.
It will probably be something goofy, a blocked punt. There'll be something goofy that happens, then somebody will get a gift touchdown that'll decide it.
This game,
catch the fever. Dude. Jacoby Brissett in prime time.
Should I just rewatch the Timbers beating the Galaxy?
Probably should.
Yeah, probably.
More points might be
WNBA.
It's
I think it's the last night of the regular season. The eighth seed is up for grabs.
Is Caitlin Clark in the playoffs?
Yes.
Yes.
Like
the
set?
Yes. Sixth seed. Yes.
Set in the playoffs?
They had a really good second half once the Olympics got done.
Well, there you go, folks. Good little show. I'm going to gamble the Pats tonight. I don't feel good about it, but I'm going to gamble the Pats tonight.
I'm with you. I'm taking the under as well.
What the hell, man?
I'm going to parlay it and do the thing you shouldn't do.
Let's get back on that horse tonight, okay?
Going to hit that Taco Bell drive-thru on the way.
I mean, I am starving, and a five-layer burrito sounds delicious, does it not?
Why do they not do a five-layer breakfast burrito?
Yes. Now we're talking.
Some cream.
Baldy at 8 tomorrow. Brian Baldinger, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I want to ask Baldy very quickly, and he's signing off. Does Baldy look at a game and say what we just said? Like, ugh. But I'm going to watch.
I mean... course we're going to watch. That will do it for us, folks. Brian Emhauser joined us talking Seahawks. Brooke Olsendam joined us talking WNBA. And what does Ron Wyden smell like? You can go check those at Dirt and Sprague at 1080 The Fan on Twitter, 1080thefan.com. Thanks so much for being a part of our Thursday, everybody. Make sure you like the video if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so yet. We will talk to you tomorrow on a Football Friday at 6 a.m. Calling us next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.